I'll begin with a poem. 3:45 p.m., April 27th, 2021. Then the divine energy formed a creature from the dirt of the earth and breathed into its nostrils the breath of life, and the creature became a living being. Genesis 2:7. The call had come early on a cold, windy day, not much time left. We rushed to hospital bedside a little more than 85 years after she first sucked in air with newborn's wail. Moved overnight from ICU to a new room, clutter of restraining death left behind, no buzzes or beeps from monitors or machines forcing air into reluctant lungs. Bed, table, three chairs, not quite enough for four children and daughter-in-law waiting for a mother to die. Anxious minutes stretching to tedious hours. Staff brought coffee and snacks as we veered from whispered confessions of love to talking as if she wasn't there. Nurses cautioned the dying can hear, but we still discussed needed arrangements, how she didn't like green peppers but wouldn't notice if diced tiny. In a moment of politics that almost drove me from the room, she teased us a bit at the end, falling still. Is that it? Is she gone? Then ragged inhale, first of several not quite final gasps, before her body was ready to move to its appointed place in the burial plot next to Dad, two lanes directly behind the cemetery's maintenance building. That was a poem I wrote about or after my mother's death a little over 3 years ago, reflecting on that experience of standing vigil, waiting for a loved one to die. And it was a way to help process that experience because talking about death and dying can be uncomfortable and awkward, bringing up emotions that we'd often rather not deal with, especially, I think, when we begin to talk about and think about our own mortality. Now, as I was figuring out what I wanted to say today for my part of the sermon, I Googled for images that represent death. And the prevalent image that came back was that of the Grim Reaper, that skeletal figure dressed in black holding a scythe. And it's an image of death as something that we should fear, that we need to escape an enemy. And of course, we might be nervous about what death will be like or what does or doesn't come after death. Thinking about death can also make us think of regrets we might have or what we will lose when we die, or the fragility of our bodies and the lack of control over what happens. Death and dying is a serious subject, but it's not one that we need to fear. Death is not our enemy. In a way, I think that we need to befriend death, respecting and honoring our mortality. At the very least, we should be able to talk about death and the worries and emotions that it stirs up within us, which is why I want to have this discussion today. You might remember, for those who were here last week, that I reflected on how our images and metaphors for God influence our understanding of, well, pretty much everything. So if we think of God as judgmental and vindictive, yes, we might very well fear death. But if God is a loving parent, then death becomes a beautiful going home. My own primary experiences of death have come through the deaths of my parents, which also make me think of my own mortality. And this inspired another poem that I wrote. A little note that I wrote to death. Dear death, I always thought I'd like to meet you as my father did, laughing at dinner with friends, unaware you were in town, then bumping into you while fishing the local creek, fast friends before sunset. But maybe mother had the better idea, getting to know you slowly over months, friendship building up to a couple of weeks of breathless intimacy in hospital. Either way, your presence always surprises like mold on the shower floor. One day I noticed the ugliness. Where did that come from? You do that, you know. make people think of mold and decay. I know we'll meet, hopefully many years from now, but and become steadfast friends. I think a slow courtship is best. Not too slow, though. I like to linger over my favorite meal, but not so long it becomes cold and miserable, but slow enough to savor the experience, the dread, and the awe. We don't need to fear death, but of course we shouldn't romanticize it either. This life, however much of it that we have, is a gift from God to be experienced and celebrated. Both the happy and joyful parts and the difficult and painful parts. Perhaps living well is the way that we can calm the fear of our own mortality. Often religions deal with mortality by focusing on an afterlife. And we're actually going to reflect on that aspect of things next week a little bit. But the author of the biblical book of Ecclesiastes suggests we should focus on enjoying what life we have. Ecclesiastes reflects on the inevitability of death and comes to the conclusion that the best thing to do is to eat and drink with a merry heart. Life isn't about toiling for wealth or fame. Those things, it says, are all an illusion. Meaning in life is found in relationship. So be kind and compassionate toward others. Enjoy living as best we can with the people we love. God has given us life to enjoy and share with each other, and that is what Ecclesiastes would have us devote our lives to. We know we will all die, whether it be tomorrow or decades from now. So why waste the present moment? Sometimes when I think about mortality in my life, I'll think back on something that I did or didn't do and wonder, well, what if I had made another choice? But I always try not to let myself dwell there. I did the best I could in those moments, and it really is what it is. We can't change the past. We can dream and hope and plan for the future, but in reality, we can only live in the present. And in this present moment, maybe we need to listen to the words of Jesus. Don't let your hearts be troubled, but trust in God. That is, trust in the power of love. What happens in the future, trust God that there will be a place for you. And what's more, Jesus tells us that we already know how to get there, how to get to that place. We get there by a life well lived in the present. Jesus said, "No one finds God except through him." And I know that sounds exclusionary on the surface, but I don't really understand that as an exclusionary statement because of how I understand Jesus. After all, Christians do not have a monopoly on God. But as Christians, we know Jesus as God's love incarnate. That is the truth of Jesus, that God's love is manifest in the world. Love. Love is the life-giving path. It is only through love that we find God, that we live life well. The trappings of religion don't really matter that much. What matters is that we love one another. And I don't mean love as a sentimental emotion, but love as an action. Kindness and compassion, empathy and respect, justice and peace. Perhaps the best way to befriend death is to make the most of every present moment. No regrets, no fears, only living and loving to the fullest of our ability. And at this time, I want to invite Lori Tupper to share with us a few of the things that she has learned on her personal journey with a terminal diagnosis.
Thanks, Pastor. I'd like to dedicate this portion of the message to Joe. Joe died about 8 weeks ago. She was a member of a death and dying support group that I attend, And I'm sad that she's no longer with us when we meet. We lit two candles tonight. One of these is for Joe, but we have found in our group that when we light a candle for her, she often expresses herself in the flames. So if you see one dancing, that's our Joe. Okay. Every morning I wake up and walk the line to the bathroom, as most people do. But 2 years ago, when I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer, the line became a tightrope. My balance became very important to me, as the cancer had spread to my bones, making them vulnerable to falls. On one side of my tightrope, I see the end goal of living well, and on the other side of my tightrope, I see the end goal of dying well. Every day, I try to hold both concepts tightly, knowing full well that a fall could affect my end game. What does it mean to me to live well? Well, I started working tax contributing jobs when I was 15 years old and worked until I was 59, with 3 years off for parenting, school, cancer treatment, and travel. So I feel like it's okay for me to do the things I enjoy in my retirement. That means for me, I spend my days with friends, reading, writing, playing mindless games on my phone, watching television, entertaining friends, dancing, visiting my grandkids and my kids, cooking, baking, and several other fun things. I am blessed to be able to surround myself with people who enjoy many of the same things I enjoy, and people who radiate positive energy. I have gradually eliminated negative energy radiators from my life and find each day filled with happiness and joy. By the way, you are the people that I enjoy being with, the people here at this church. Another aspect of living well for me is intense celebrations of a life well enjoyed. My first celebration was in August 2022, which was one of the happiest days of my life. Over 200 people came to celebrate me, which reinforced to me how many blessings I have been granted since July 10th, 1959, the day I was born. Because my quarterly scans have been stable, meaning no spreading of the cancer, I have decided to step up my living well with more parties. My next party will be this summer on July 27th from 4 to 8. You're all invited, so save the date, mark your calendars, and come. This party is also part of my dying well regimen. What is the most important thing to feel when we are dying? My answer is, it is important for me to know that I was loved and that I made a difference by being here. Another important part of my dying well regimen was finding a support group that lifted my spirits and that was willing to dialogue honestly about our unique journeys. I found that support group through the Commonweal organization based in California. I'm a part of a Zoom support group that meets twice a week. We are comprised of only 3 members right now with terminal diagnoses and 3 facilitators, all of which are certified death doulas. What a gift for us to be able to ask them anything we want. It is such a gift to meet with these people and discuss our mortality and what it is teaching us. These precious people have taught me more than I could ever have learned on my own. But I think what I appreciate most is the positivity present in the spirit of these 6 souls. Our group is called Dying Without the Elephant in the Room. And we have recognized many feelings of struggle, resilience, pains, anticipations, dreads, tolerances, but mostly, I would say, appreciation, happiness, euphoria, and acceptance. Our altar tonight is adorned with 3 animals that have become representative of our terminal illnesses in our support group. We have Ellie the elephant to your far left to represent death in our Dying Without the Elephant group. So that represents death. Then we have Rio the rhinoceros to represent the side effects of our illnesses. I'm not sure why we did this, but it adds lightness to our talk. And if someone says, my rhinoceros is really giving me problems, we know that their side effects of their illness are really bothering them. And last, we have Peggy the Pegasus. She represents the gifts of our terminal illnesses. Gifts, What gifts could possibly be associated with any terminal illness? Well, that is what I really want you to pay attention to in this message. Here are my gifts. I get to tell my friends and family how much I love them and how much I will miss them before I die. I get to apologize for things that I may have done to hurt others before I die. I get to thank them for being in my life and for helping to create who I am and the part they have played in my awesome life experiences before I die. I get to deliberate for days, weeks, or months about special gifts I want to buy my family members, gifts that will hopefully help them to remember and feel close to me for the rest of their lives. I get to tell people I love them as much as I want to. My days are numbered, and it makes sense for me to put those words out there in the universe as much as possible, and I try to. I get to focus on the legacy I want to leave behind. For me, my legacy is my books, so my family can read my crazy stories for many years to come. I get to choose how I want my death to be and choose who will surround me as I embrace that sacred transition. I get to have these really awesome party celebrations to celebrate who I am with people who actually like me. Because the ones who don't like me, and there are a few, quite a few probably, don't come to my parties. So I get to model to my world a way to die well and maybe help alleviate some of the fear of dying for others. I get to have fun just doing the things I'm doing, traveling, spending time with grandkids, lots of lunches with people I love. Every moment with my soulmate, Michael, is special, and moments that we try to mindfully appreciate as they happen because we know they are limited. I get to say no to anything I want and people will listen because I have cancer. I get to connect with others who are terminally ill and have conversations that lift my spirit and connect me to the core of others. I get to prepare my spirit energy for something bigger and, no doubt in my mind, something much better. Another task I assigned myself to die well was to find myself a death doula, which I'm extremely happy to be able to say I have. Her name is Valerie. She was going to be here tonight and couldn't make it. I'm so sorry. I would love for you to meet her because she is kind. She listens. She's a gentle person with a strong faith in giving ways. I feel incredibly blessed to have her in my life. There are many other things I am working on to die well. I completed my third book shortly after I was diagnosed, and I'm presently working on some other writing projects. Perhaps the most important thing I am doing to try to spend as much is trying to spend as much time as I can with my five grandchildren. I really want them to live long enough for them to remember me. In 2022, after I was diagnosed, I spent an entire week home alone grieving. I walked, stomped at times around the house, sobbing and wailing. And then I would rest for a bit before doing more of the same. Because it is a loss. You're grieving the loss of a wonderful life that you've lived. But then the tightrope appeared, and I realized I was about to learn and experience things I would never have experienced without this diagnosis. And then one day it became clear that a new balance was necessary in my life. And for that, I'm incredibly thankful. As I walk the line back from the bathroom each morning to my bed, usually to crawl back into bed to cuddle with my soulmate, I know that when I get up to begin my day, I will once again walk the tightrope of balance. Thank you very much.